This show is sponsored by MyOliveLeaf.biz, MyOliveLeaf.biz, and The Hurricane Report, merchandise, and more.
Due to some violent content, parental discretion is advised.
There are new developments in the death of George Floyd, the unarmed black man in Minneapolis who died in police custody. We're hearing from the paramedics who treated him.
In a new report, the fire department says medics in the ambulance checked his pulse several times, finding none. He was later pronounced dead at the hospital. Tonight, the other officers involved have been identified as Thomas Lane, J. Alexander Kung, and Tu Tao. But Chauvin is under the most scrutiny. Even though the Floyd investigation is ongoing, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey called for Chauvin to be arrested.
Do you think that was murder?
I do.
You do?
Let me be clear. The arresting officer killed someone. As to the precise charge, I'm not going to get into that.
All right, guys. Right now you're listening to the voice of Valerie Denise Jones. I hope you're having a great day. I am not having a great day. This one is a tough one because, as you guys very well know, we cover these stories live. We cover them when they're happening or, you know, during the infancy stages. So it is hard after you have worked with the attorneys and celebrities and, you know, Joshua Brown and the panelists. It's hard to backtrack and cover these stories again, to put them on the platforms that I man. And I've been very honest with you guys. It is not always easy financially because I do it by myself. It is not always easy to do it because I do all the editing and the graphics and, you know, all the updates by myself. So it isn't always easy to come back and listen, you know, to the stories again, to read the comments, you know, to cover all the updates and information because so much is coming out at such a rapid rate, you know. And today again was especially hard because I cannot shake George Floyd's cry for life. And I can't shake the vision of that demon spirit who kept his knee on that man's neck because he has no sense of humanity. Because he's a demon and doesn't deserve freedom. Doesn't deserve a lot of things. And I don't normally wish things on people, but that demon deserves everything that's coming to him. I apologize to you guys. Let me do something good. And that is, let me go into the comment section real quick. Because, guys, you know that I love you so much. And I do this for you. I do this because I want you to be safe. I do this because I want you to be well informed. I do this because I want you to have conversations and I want you to have the energy and the strength to go out and do healthy protests when things like this happen. Because, guys, all we've got is each other. Sometimes, big shout out to the mayor of Minneapolis. Big shout out to Lance Williams, who supported me financially. I appreciate you so much. Big shout out. Again, I'm just going to run down a few names in the comment section. Just because I don't mention your name, it doesn't mean that I don't love you and I don't see you, because I do. But Brother Voodoo, Ali Davis, Paul Morris, Miss Bossy, Sandra Mack, Alex Plummer, Poncho Velo, please be safe out there if you are driving. Domestic Vivian, Bernard James, Mike Brooks, CD, Paul Morris. Oh my God, the list just goes on and on and on. Guys, I can't get this sound out of my head. This sound.
Please, I can't breathe.
That plea for relief is coming from 46-year-old George Floyd.
What do you want?
I can't breathe.
On the ground, his neck being held down by a Minneapolis police officer's knee.
Well, you got it down, man.
Please. I can't breathe, officer.
Shut up.
They will kill me. They will kill me, man.
Bro, with your feet on his neck, man, you get off the
ground. His nose is bleeding.
That's raw right there with his feet on his neck.
Look at his nose.
You just seen your knee and his neck.
Yeah, he got your feet right on his neck.
He ain't even resisting arrest.
I cannot breathe.
You're just a grown. You're a tough guy. You're a tough guy. You're not even resisting the rest, bro.
His whole nose.
You don't want to fight with him,
bro? But why you just sitting there? He ain't doing nothing. Now put him in the car.
It'll kill me.
How long y'all gotta hold him down?
This is why we don't do drugs, kids.
It ain't about drugs, bro. Y'all understand that?
Y'all don't gotta put y'all. Right.
He is human, bro.
His nose is complete.
But I'm saying you can put him in the car. That's a bum-ass shit.
We tried that for 10 minutes.
That's a bum-ass shit, bro. That's a bum-ass shit, bro. Y'all know that. You don't got to sit there with your knee on his neck, bro.
He's talking.
Bro, he ain't crying, bro.
We're done.
You circle, okay. Like, in a jiu-jitsu move, bro, you trapped in his breathing right there, bro.
Okay.
Like, you don't think that what it is, bro? You don't think nobody understands that shit right there, bro? I train at the academy, bro. That's some bullshit, bro. Right, that's bullshit, bro. That's bullshit, bro. You fucking stopping his breathing right there, bro.
Yeah, can't breathe.
Okay, he's talking.
He's talking. Bro, but you could get him off the ground. You've been a bum right now. You could get him off the ground, bro. You could get him off the ground. You've been a bum right now. He enjoying that. He enjoying that shit. He enjoying that shit. He a fucking bum, bro. He enjoying that shit right now, bro. You could have fucking put him in the car by now, bro. He's not resisting arrest or nothing. You enjoying it. Look at you. Your body language explains it. You fucking bum.
Bro, get the fuck off of him.
It's the whites. They love him.
No, I already know that, bro. I trained with half of these bum ass dudes at the academy, bro. You know that's bogus right now, bro. You know it's bogus. You can't even look at me like a man because you a bum, bro. He's not even resisting arrest right now, bro.
His nose is bleeding.
You fucking stopping his breathing right now, bro. You think that's cool? You're a bum for that, bro. You getting mad. You just sitting there stopping his breathing right
now.
You about to go out right now, bro.
Look at him. Get off of him now.
What
the fuck? He got mace.
He cannot breathe. Seconds later, bystanders start questioning police. Floyd was held down for roughly 4 minutes before he stops moving or responding.
He's not responsive right now.
The officer keeps his knee on Floyd's neck for at least 8 minutes.
On to Minneapolis, Cub Foods. 3759 Chicago Avenue, code 2 for medical.
Minutes later, paramedics take Floyd to the hospital, where he was pronounced dead. 9-year-old Judea Reynolds watched it happen.
All the dogs kept saying, get off him.
They came and woke me up, and my daughter, only thing she could tell me was, Mom, they had his knee in the neck, and they killed him.
There's a black man died that could have been invented, because all I had to do was get his feet off his neck.
Less than a day after George Floyd's arrest, the four Minneapolis police officers involved are fired.
We watched as a white officer pressed his knee into the neck of a black man. For 5 minutes, the community, to the family, I'm so sorry. Being black in America should not be a death sentence. When you hear someone calling for help, you are supposed to help.
In a statement, the Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis calling for the community to remain calm until the investigation is complete, saying in part, now is not the time to rush to judgment and immediately condemn our officers. But the calls to prosecute are growing.
We are sick and tired of being sick and tired. Too many lives have been taken. Mr. Floyd should have not died. He should still be alive today.
This is what I got to wake up to, huh? Floyd was my brother, man. We called each other twin, bro. Everybody know me and Floyd called each other twin.
A friendship that started thanks to a mutual friend. NBA champion and former Spur Steven Jackson says his relationship with George Floyd blossomed because they thought they looked alike.
If he needed me, I was there for him. He was probably one of my biggest supporters, genuine supporter. Somebody really wanted to see me win. And we became real brothers. I think he was closer to me than some of my own family.
My boy was doing what he's supposed to do, man. Y'all go and kill my brother, man. Y'all go and kill my brother, man. Y'all go and kill my brother, man.
Jackson says the fact that Floyd was on the cusp of change, of quote, better days, makes it even harder to process that his friend is gone.
People tell me not to get angry, and it's hard not to get angry. It's hard not to get angry. Because I get the same anger when it happens to somebody that I don't know.
I get this same anger when I see somebody homeless on the street and I can't do nothing to help them. So it's hard because you see these people get off and it's like there's nothing you can do.
But Jackson says he will try to use his voice in Minnesota to make sure the name of his twin, George Floyd, won't be forgotten or muddied.
I'm going down there to let everybody know there's no reason to twist, to make a narrative about him. There's no reason to make up stuff and think what you knew about him. I knew him. I'm here speaking of him.
And it's going to sound fucked up, and I want it to sound fucked up. I want it to sound fucked up, because it is fucked up. You just take my boy life, and what we supposed to do? What his family supposed to do? Just move on, hope you go to jail. Hope they punish you for killing my boy. Why we can't just kill you? Why, that's the justice we want, because we can't get nothing back. So the cops should die too. Y'all just killing people for no reason? The only justice is taking y'all life. But they're not going to do that. They're not going to give y'all the death penalty. They give people death penalty for other shit, but they're not going to give y'all the death penalty for killing nobody, huh? All right. Bet that.
Mayors can shape events in their city. But more often than not, it's events in our city that shape us. There are precedents and protocols sitting in the reserves of institutions just like this one that will give you about 1,000 reasons not to do something, not to speak out, not to act so quickly. And I've wrestled with, more than anything else over the last 36 hours, one fundamental question. Why is the man who killed George Floyd not in jail? If you had done it, or I had done it, we would be behind bars right now. And I cannot come up with a good answer to that question. And so I'm calling on Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman to act on the evidence before him. I'm calling on him to charge the arresting officer in this case.
I was shocked and horrified by the video of George Floyd's death. It's very clear to anyone that what happened to George Floyd is wrong. The lack of humanity in the video, as I said, made me physically ill. And even more difficult to understand. So I want to be very clear. My heart aches for Mr. Floyd's family and friends. Watching any of the video of what happened to George Floyd and then watching citizens come out last night, I too share that urge of just a primal scream of when you watch humanity get erased in front of you. It is almost inexplicable how you respond.
Breaking overnight and into the early morning, the riots meant to bring justice to George Floyd's death have left another person shot and killed while chaos reigns over the city.
Jason, we have seen a whole lot of fires, violence, rioting. We will let you know and show you what we've been following overnight.
Black lives do not matter as much as white lives. If black lives matter as much as white lives, Mr. George Floyd will still be breathing. If black lives matter as much as white lives, Ahmaud Arbery would have finished his job, his jog. If black lives matter as much as white lives, Christian Cooper wouldn't have been falsely accused. Black lives do not matter as much as white lives. Why? Because we tolerate hatred, bigotry, and invidious discrimination. We tolerate it, and because we tolerate it, we allow it to be perpetuated. We in this country have the power to do something about the racism that exists as it relates to black people. We have tolerated it since 1619 and the arrival of black people in the Americas. But it's time for us to do something about it. Black lives matter, and we ought not tolerate it to the extent that we have. I believe that we in the Congress of the United States of America have a duty to do what has been done in the past. We declared a war on poverty. We declared a war on drugs. Why not declare a war on racism? Why not decide that here and now we are not going to allow racism to continue in this country to the extent that people lose their lives? What happened to some of the persons who've lost their lives as of late is almost predictable, because we have seen circumstances similar occur and we have not taken aggressive action. The officers in the Floyd case should not only be arrested, they ought to be prosecuted. I was a magistrate. I know probable cause when I see it, and there is probable cause to arrest and prosecute those officers. Black Lives Matter. And those who have not allowed the Black Lives Matter movement to continue to become the movement that could make a difference in the lives of people in this country, you have some responsibility, because you fought the very movement that was going to make a difference in the lives of people, may have saved some lives of people. So I rise today, Mr. Speaker, to say that we in Congress have some responsibility to the people we serve. And a part of that responsibility is to assure them that they can go jogging and return home, that if they are arrested by the police, they won't be suffocated to the extent that they lose their lives. We have to make sure that we tell this country in no uncertain terms that black lives do matter. And finally, this. It's not about Democrats and not about Republicans. I'm not blaming the Republicans for what's happening. I'm not blaming the Democrats for what's happening. I'm blaming people who hold public trust and tolerate hate and invidious discrimination. We are the people who can make a difference, and we ought to make a difference. We ought to demand that the people running for public office make public statements about how they plan to end invidious discrimination, not how they plan to tolerate it, how they plan to manage it. How do you plan to end it? This is our time. If we don't do it now, when will we do it? No candidate should be off limits. Every one of them ought to have to tell us what they plan to do. And finally, as my final comments, I love my country. And because I love my country, I feel that I have this duty, obligation, and responsibility to speak up when these kinds of injustices occur. I love my country, Mr. Speaker, and I yield back the balance of my time.
All right, guys, before I introduce what Justice Brown had to say, I'd like to first ask you to please hit the like button if you haven't already. Also, hit the alert buttons so that you can stay current, because I am going to post more often than not. And also, if you haven't subscribed, please subscribe to the channel. All of my information is down in the description box. If you need to reach me for any one thing in particular, and I can also be reached on Instagram at Valerie Denise Jones, at Valerie Denise Jones. All right, so before I play Justice Brown, I just want you to hear what Reverend L. Sharpton had to say, and also Eric Garner's mom. Okay, here we go.
Yesterday, we spoke with the brothers and cousins of Brother Floyd. And we said to them, thank you. We said to them that in 2014, Eric Garner was assaulted by police in New York, choked, put in a chokehold, and said, "I can't breathe." And the officer would not let the chokehold go, and he died. They would not prosecute that officer. Wow. It took us 5 years to get him fired.
Can't take 5 years.
If they had prosecuted that officer, maybe Floyd would be alive today.
Amen. Amen.
Why do I say that at the scene of his death? It's because we're going to make sure that this prosecution goes down. Right. So we're not somewhere yes, 5 years from now saying they should have prosecuted Floyd.
Yes.
In the Floyd case. Now, in order to make an arrest, All you need, brother, please, we here to do press. Don't block press, please. We're here to get a message out. Let's not argue between each other. In order to get an arrest, all you need is probable cause.
That's it.
If you see a crime and a criminal, and there is no reason for the crime, an arrest is made. Then a grand jury decides if there's an indictment, and then a judge and jury decides whether or not there's a conviction. You do not need anything more than you have now.
What?
To arrest those four policemen.
What?
There are probable cause right now. You have a deceased person. You have a tape showing how he was deceased.
What?
You have a tape showing the other three police did nothing to prevent it.
What?
Then they should tell these four police what they tell all of us in the hood. Mm-hmm. Tell it to the judge. We come to stand with this family and stand with the community because this is a struggle that we've had all over this country. And let's not tell half the story. The reason why you see the anger in Minneapolis is because this is not the first time. And this is not the first time you ignored the rights of people. Sometimes that Martin Luther King Jr. said that sometimes when you see riots, it's the unheard speaking. Yes, we are nonviolent, but we understand the outrage and the anger. We're all angry, but we use our anger a different way. But when I got here, someone said to me, are you going to address the violence? The violence I'm addressing is how a man could hold a man down with a knee on his neck for 9 minutes.
What?
That's when the violence started. The violence started on this corner when this man was choked to death begging for his life. So we must act in a way to get justice and to get fairness.
What?
We're not asking for a favor, we're asking for what is right.
Justice.
One of the things that's good is that we've seen blacks and whites together.
All right.
And they respect the space of the black pain.
Yes.
And that's a good thing.
Amen.
We want a movement to show we're together.
Yes.
On this Saturday, we're going to call people all over the country to gather and be part of the We Can't Breathe movement.
Right.
In different cities. Gwen Carr, the mother of Eric Garner, and I are going back to the scene where he was choked in New York on Saturday to link with those here in Minneapolis and around the country. So we wanted to come here first and give our respect. We will be back for the memorial services and the funeral. The family has asked us to speak. They're going to do memorial services probably here and in Houston where he was raised. He was born in North Carolina. We're going to be with them the whole way. Attorney Ben Crump, where we have won cases together. If we stand with him, we stand with these grassroots ministers that believe that God didn't call them to be served, but to be servants. If you're not a servant, then you're not called by God. You're manipulating people. These preachers are servants, and they'll be in the streets. And we'll be back over and over again. But I didn't want to send word. I wanted to come and let you know we are with you until we get justice.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let me also say there are those that say to me, Reverend Al, we need peace, and we do. But there's a difference between peace and quiet.
Right.
Some people just want quiet. The price for peace is justice. Don't just tell people to shut up and be quiet and keep suffering. Give them peace. Let them know the value on their life. Let them know the law works for them. And you won't have to quiet them down. They will be glad about it. We want justice. No justice. And no peace. That's what we said. Let me let Ms. Carr, the mother of Eric Garner, who just started with, I can't breathe.
Good afternoon, people.
Good afternoon.
I come to stand in solidarity with the family and you all. As you know, this happened to me almost 6 years ago.
Oh, hallelujah.
And this is just opening up an old wound, pouring salt into it. Mm. They keep coming into, the police officers come into our neighborhoods. They brutalize. They terrorize. They murder our children. What? And we have done nothing. They don't find a weapon. They say they thought that they saw a weapon. They feared for their life. Mm. How did they fear for their life in this case?
Mm. They dragged them out.
They had a young man in handcuffs. I didn't see any resistance.
None.
Why was their foot on his neck?
What?
And then they said they tried to resuscitate. How are you going to resuscitate a fatally injured person?
What?
This memory is so clear in my head.
Oh.
Years ago, the officers involved in my son's murder, it was lies after lies, cover-up after cover-up. I just commend this mayor for acting so swiftly. Because in my case, it took 5 years. 5 years just to fire one officer, and it would not have happened if I wouldn't have kept pressing on after the federal government said that they wasn't going forward. I said, you may not go forward, but I am.
Amen.
And that's what you must do.
Amen.
Because this is not going to be an easy fight. I'm going to tell you right now. Everybody is with you now. But later on, it's going to be a lonely road. And only you can choose if you're going to keep on going or you're going to just lay back and say, oh, this is another news story. We cannot let this be another news story.
No, 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 no more.
We all have to get out and stand together.
Amen.
And we don't have to do it violently.
All right.
We can do it politically.
Yes,
we can.
Voting is coming up.
Yeah, it is.
Don't sit around and say, my vote don't count.
Yeah.
We put these politicians in, and we can take them out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's up to you. How do you stand on this?
We love you.
I do my part. A lot of things y'all don't see me. Y'all see me on TV sometimes, but a lot of times you don't. I'm up in Albany, my state capital, talking to the legislators. I don't believe in writing letters. I don't believe in phone calls. I believe in face-to-face. I want them to see me when I ask for my demands. And I want your personal cell phone number. I don't want the office number. I want your personal number. So when you don't do what I ask you to do, or I can tell you, you want my vote, you better come and get it. Okay? And so I hope all of you do the same. And we're not going to forget this young man. We're not going to forget my son. But you know what? We must go forward, because this young man, my son, they won't come back. But we must fight for others. My son must fight for your son, your nephew, your grandson. So let's stand together.
Come on, we can breathe.
We can breathe.
Louder.
We can breathe.
Louder.
We can breathe.
Louder.
We can breathe.
Louder.
We can breathe.
Everyone.
We can breathe.
Yeah.
We can breathe.
Yeah.
We can breathe.
All right, guys, we are near the very end of this episode, and this next portion features Joshua Brown, Officer Crenshaw, Dr. Inky, Bishop Scott, Brother Bernard. There were a lot of people on the line that day. We came together. It was so impromptu. So the audio quality is all over the place, guys. Forgive me for that. But we came together because the story was unraveling at such a rapid rate that we just wanted to touch on a few points. One of the points I want to clear up before I move forward is the question that I posed mid-session, and that was, do you ever get tired of being black in America? And I want to clear this up because it wasn't because of any kind of self-hate on my part. I love, absolutely love, love, love being black. I love my melanated skin. I love being of a darker hue. I love being me. What I hate is the hatred that's spewed upon us by other people who have no sense of humanity. I think earlier I called them demon spirits, and I mean that. I meant it, I mean it, and I forever, ever will stand on that. But anyway, guys, let's get started. Again, please make sure to hit the like button, subscribe, meet me on social media, Instagram at Valerie Denise Jones, or go to the website, thejustyourbrownshow.com. Here we go.
Africa is not going to be the place to be, never will be, until it develops a military capability that is respectable. They name planes, they name trains, and they name places after Native Americans because they fought. They don't name crap after black folk unless it's Martin Luther King Boulevard in some of one of the many cities that's got one. That's the total.
Which is always
that
the worst
the
neighborhood
NAACP
in every city.
Application of ASPCA, be kind to the poor animals. And I'm sick and tired of being treated like some damn junior out in the yard, chained up or put in a cage, waiting on somebody to feed kibbles and bits. That's what I don't like about reparations. Yeah, we are entitled to it, but it sounds like a bunch of yapping dogs out there trying to say, "Boss, boss, open up some more of them kibbles, you know, them bacon bits." Yeah. You got to go take it. We're talking about let's go back to Africa, and everybody in Africa wants to get over here for the opportunity, and we don't even see it. We talk about land. We talk about we need to have a place. Well, assuming somebody is going to give us one, you got to deal with somebody like me. Because if we get some territory to get set aside with us, and we don't have the Constitution and the government in there, Joe Brown and his boys are going to take it over and run it. And I'm going to take every pimp, thug, drug dealer, hoe, thug, gangbang, and I'm going to either have them working as flunkies for me, or I'm putting them on a wall and shooting them. And I'm not asking you what the hell you want done. I'll do it the way I want it or the way somebody I designate does it. Now, that's the alternative. So get ready for it. You got to take control of your situation. You got to be prepared to take control of your situation. You got to start in the damn home, and you don't need some little half-bent floozy who had your behinds because she wanted a bigger check. And if you got a mama like that, hopefully the rest of us will come in and do something about it instead of being slaves to this propaganda on the media where they glorify damn dysfunction over and over and over again.
Let me just say this. I think that on this situation, right, I think that if we really listen to all the things that the judge is saying, I think he's given us a lot, and I think that he is in a position, unlike a lot of people that we have in leadership, to speak to us from a different angle because, A, he started out by letting us know he was a part of what went down in 65, but then we know now, because we know his title as judge, that at one point he was the angry citizen, and then at another point he did what needed to be done, took the sacrifices, the bruises, the bumps to get into a position where he could start to initiate some change. But what I think is coming across is that that's not being done enough on either level. Accountability is kind of what I'm picking up. And I think that that might be the way to go on a variety of levels. I think self-accountability is it. In terms of hope, I definitely think there's hope because we're addressing the situation. If there was no hope, people wouldn't be addressing the situation. So I think just the fact that we're creating these conversations, that we're seeing these things, we're able to critically examine them, I do want to say, you know, the officers were fired. I haven't seen a situation play out like that yet. You know, usually it's a whole bunch of back and forth. Guys are on the desk work, and then, you know, they're found not guilty, et cetera, et cetera.
Dr. Inkey, Officer Crenshaw said they were fired because of possible lawsuits.
Well, here's the thing.
They got fired for incompetence, for dereliction of duty.
For whatever reason, they were fired, it happened. Like, you know, we can't take it off the table. They were like in cases before this, we haven't seen swift action. So whether they were deemed incompetent or whether they were deemed liabilities for behaving incompetently, they were still swiftly fired.
Well, doctor, yeah. In a lot of cases with law enforcement, I won't say a lot. Some, they fire them immediately based on the liability for the city, releasing themselves or for the municipality that they work with. Now, once it goes through its process, that officer can, if he's cleared, he can ask for his job back and get his job back. But in order for them to take the monkey off of their shoulders, a lot of municipalities just terminate right off the bat.
Wow, I didn't know that they could get their job back after being fired.
Of course.
Yeah, if they're cleared of any wrongdoing throughout the investigation, they can turn around and say, okay, I want my job back.
So this is a semantic, and it could just be a semantics job on a suspension, basically. You're fired for a couple weeks, then we rehire you quietly.
They're terminated during the investigation and the outcome of the investigation. If during that investigation, if they are found exonerated, cleared, then they can ask for their job back based on the fact of whoever their attorney might be and the money that they have lost. Because in most cases, you can get put on suspension during the investigation with pay. You can be put on suspension without pay. If you're put on suspension without pay, you're not going to get that money back whether you're cleared or not because you were still affiliated with the department. So when they terminate them, stopping all monetary issues that are going to them, any privileges, benefits, anything. Basically, the city or the municipality is saying, we don't want nothing to do with it, so don't sue us. To him directly.
Did you guys get a chance to find out why they even fired the other three cops? Like, we know why the one
they
cop
stood fired. Around letting it happen. That's
okay. Exactly. Stupidity.
So they just stood around and watched. Prove that.
Right, they basically co-defendants. Yeah, they co-defendants, basically.
Their job is to keep law and order, and they allow disorder and unlawfulness, or, let's put it this way, appropriate conduct to continue in their presence. I personally witnessed some detectives arrest a uniformed cop on the spot when they observed him to do something.
I only
so
say that because people were really shocked that remember the Ahmaud Arbery case? And the guy who was actually filming was actually charged with murder. And it just seemed like this. I thought maybe it was a new law or something because this wasn't something that.
No, it's
that
a new law.
No, you co-defended.
What he got charged with.
You rolled down there together. You in.
What he got
Judge,
charged
I can't hear you. Judge,
case.
I can't hear you. Judge,
what,
I can hear you.
What he got charged with in the Arbery case was felony murder. In other words, he was on a joint venture with some people that was an inappropriate felony, which was going to be the unlawful detention, kidnapping, as it were, of another citizen. And because of recklessness that came out of the situation, somebody died from felony murder. In other words, you break into a grocery store and you hold the place up, and the security guard shoots at one of the robbers. The security guard misses and kills a citizen. The citizen is dead. So does the security guard get charged with murder properly? No. the people that tried to hold the place up who put it in motion are charged with the murder. See,
right. And in the Aubrey case, because that knucklehead decided he wanted to follow, it basically affiliated him with them. That was something that they pre-planned to do. Let's film him, and we'll follow him, and then we'll do this, and we'll do that. The dumbasses, you know. So basically, if he had been a total stranger and came up and caught the end of it, he might not have been charged. But because he filmed from beginning to end, he's a party to a crime.
Exactly. And he was a party to the whole process of let's go out and this man has done nothing but jog through the neighborhood and let's get involved in pulling him over, stopping him, jacking him up like somebody still actively playing cop and violate his rights. And we're detaining him at gunpoint. Melanie.
You're breaking up quite a bit.
Okay. Well, in other words, you detain him at gunpoint. You're part of the whole plan. You are following along in lead with some armed people who have no business stopping this guy because he's about what he's doing. But it didn't have to assist so much as he was part of the overall plan or scheme. In an extreme situation, it becomes conspiracy. In other words, even if you did not commit any act yourself, if anybody who's part of the conspiracy commits an overt act, you're guilty of it if they can prove it.
Yeah. The final thing regarding this, because I definitely want to get your take on Bill Gates real quick before we go, but do you guys think that protest will amount to anything? The protest in Minneapolis, you think it will lend itself to anything positive, or is it in vain?
It conditions the public to become used to it, and it sets something for others. Yeah, man, we got to be down like they was up in Minnesota, man, yeah. And see, that leads to stuff. Well, as I told you before, this looks like 1962 to me. By 1964, 65, people were doing some serious uprisings. It got Lyndon Baines Johnson's administration to say, we cannot have two societies. I went through the congressional record when I worked as an intern with this D.C. think tank almost 50 years ago, and we were looking at the Voting Rights Act of 68 and amendments to the Civil Rights Act of 64, and of the 60,000 pages, there weren't but about four and a half talking about civil rights demonstrations. Almost all of them were talking about the damage done to the American infrastructure by what was going down that was the destructive equivalent of the Army Air Force's bombing campaign in Nazi Germany in World War II. That's what everybody was concerned about. I hate to say mm-hmm. it, but vesting mm-hmm. consequence is an important thing to the human collective psyche. And when black people in the mid-60s burnt down these cities and vested consequence, that got results. I'm not advocating breaking the law, but it does have its effects. Civil disobedience, peacefully, nonviolently, was breaking the law, but it had minimal effects compared to the threat of overt violence. Now, I'll just say that as a historical observation.
I know
Does
that.
Does anybody else want to chime in?
I know that when the ADA was passed, it was because people with disabilities didn't just what Judge Brown was talking about. They had nonviolent, disobedient actions. They climbed the stairs of Capitol Hill. Actually, not even climbed. They crawled up the stairs of Capitol Hill, protesting and forcing the government to find the yield and give us the Americans with Disabilities Act. That was an effective method of nonviolent activity, yet disobedience to the standards that society has set up. Sometimes you have to do that. sometimes you have to protest, but in a way that's effective, not protest with signs and all of that. You have to take some sort of action. Those people, in fact, it was decided finally to pass when a little 8-year-old child, girl, crawled up the stairs. She had cerebral palsy, and she climbed up the stairs, all those stairs up to Capitol Hill, said, now I'm here. And the touched and affected the congressperson so much that it impacted them and moved them to sign the bill. And, of course, ultimately, George Herbert Walker Bush signed it into law. Yes, civil action does take place and does make a difference. And I think, like I said before, once you begin dealing with the authorities that be, Capitol Hill, not the peons. See, we like to deal with the ones on the bottom, and we ignore the ones on the top. You know, when we started moving toward that, I know I just recently went to Washington, D.C. I protested in Harrisburg. I protested in City Hall concerning them trying to get rid of, at that time, Obamacare, and trying to get rid of Medicare and Medicaid, the Republican Party. It made a difference in the State House. It made a difference in the Capitol, on Capitol Hill. And it made a difference in City Hall. It does make a difference. But participation, I'm going to say it again, until we start doing that, this little getting all upset about one little thing for a minute, and then everything is business as usual. It has to be perpetual. It has to center around the system and the government and the powers that be. If they don't know you're upset about something, just because you're out there in the street, it doesn't mean that you're going to carry it through. And like I said before, and if you see it over and over again, and Judge Brown certainly knows over the history of time, because we both lived it, they weighed us out. The difference between Martin Luther King and the leaders of today, Martin Luther King had a boycott of the bus system there in Alabama, and it lasted for nearly half a year. Not a couple of weeks, not a couple of days, but no one got on those buses for 100+ days. 100+ days they did not get on those buses. They walked, carpooled,
they did
work, whatever they had to do. But they didn't do that, and that broke the bus system, and that made the change.
I'm the second highest paid person at the time in television. And I went to jail for 5 days as a protest behind some woman getting treated like crap by a racist system that didn't even have personal jurisdiction over the woman. So you got to be willing to take a stand.
Exactly.
Hey.
Do you guys?
I think that's the reason why. I was just gonna say. I think that's the reason why a lot of us respect your opinion, Judge, and your experiences because of your unique, I guess, resume, for lack of a better term, maybe. Because you've been on both sides, then you went up the ladder in terms of the legal route, became a judge, then moved from there, went into TV, and then we still see you even at that level on the front line. Even in this conversation, you know, a lot of us are listening, and we're hearing you thoroughly. You know what I mean? So I think that gives you a certain level of qualification. But again, like many of the people on the line, I think the challenge is getting the community as a whole to understand self-accountability in regards to being able to walk the walk. Like you brothers are saying, yeah, well, I was over here and I was protesting this way and this, that, and the other, and over here. And even me, I can say myself that I participated in a couple of protests that were in Lower Manhattan, in Brooklyn, at the UN building. But I don't think that a lot of people, I think that social media, in many ways, even though social media is allowing people to communicate these things and get word out and show video, etc., I think that in many ways, social media is moving people to inactivity where, you know, people feel like it's enough to put a post up and then, you know, silently complain off into the darkness.
I had asked the question, and Judge Bishop, Dr. Inke, and Brother Bernard, do y'all ever get tired of being black in America? That's a question.
Hey. Hell no. Hell no. Hell no. I come here every day.
Hey, how you doing, Mitchell?
Hey,
Brother Bernard. How you doing?
Man,
doing?
That's a question.
So you
want
to turn in your resignation and make an application to somebody or something else?
Well, you know, George, actually, you know what? George always has one good point. Some of us do hate being black, but it's not the black that you think. When you say I want to be a transgender or a gay, when you say you want to be a transgender, especially, you're basically saying I'm self-hating myself. So actually, you do have a lot of people that feel that way, but that's not me. I say I'm around what I'm born with, so I ain't no self-hate here. But that is a form of self-hate when you want to be something else.
That's the driving engine behind LGBTQ. They can bail on whatever they are and become something else. It's the new elective minority. See, that's LGBTQ. You can bail on what you are, resign from what your ethnic group is, and become part of a larger ethnic group. If I guess you get initiated by bending over or getting on your knees, whatever you do, you know? So... There's one of the driving engines behind
Darn
all of
DeMarco.
That. But one, let me just say this. This is my last point. A good cop is one hell of an asset to everybody involved. A bad cop is everybody's enemy. So not good, and all of them are not bad. Many more are good or in between than there are bad ones. And in terms of influence, this unmentionable organization that's called the Syndicate, politely, used to control police departments by what they did, and they could get their ways, and the police would turn a blind eye to whatever they wanted to do. But you see, that promoted general crime. We don't want that. But just like that organization could control police departments, control the courts, control juries, control prosecutors, we can do it for a legitimate purpose if we just start doing what we need to do it, which is self-focus, putting this in a kid's head in the home, preparing yourself once you get through the process of primary education, and once you get out, maintaining the right attitude, the right standard of awareness, and sophistication, knowledge, information, and rationality. But, you see, it's hard work. We're so used to instant gratification that we want it handed to us because we asked for it. That is the curse of everything that's happened since 1970. It's an expectation that it is going to be given just because it's wanted. I dream, therefore, it shall be. It doesn't work this way. This is not Tomorrowland. Well, not Tomorrowland. This is not Fantasyland in Walt Disney's world or Disneyland. Make it happen.
Yeah, I don't think that. I don't think that. I don't really know anybody. I'm from 158th Street in the Bronx. You know, born in the late 70s. Coming up in the 80s as a tween, a teenager and a teenager, there was a point when I was in junior high school where, like for instance, and between the time I was in the 7th grade to the 9th grade, maybe 13 of my close friends were killed. One of my friends, Mike, he was killed right on the school, junior high school 149 clock. He was killed right there on the school. May have even taken his last breaths in my hand by a gang from the projects across the street, and the argument was about a basketball game. In that time period, it was nothing. My oldest daughter, her mom is from Cypress Avenue in the Bronx. It was nothing in that time period for us to walk over dead bodies or to be looking out the window and watch people get shot, stabbed to death. Like, this was a common, regular occurrence. So I'm just saying all that to say, you know, I'm from the worst time period in the worst neighborhood, right? But I still, with that being said, I don't know anybody that's necessarily tired of being black. You know, I think that we always felt an intrinsic pride. And then as people become more educated about what that means biochemically, I think there's more pride instilled. I think the problems come from the social stigma associated with being black and those connotations that people may be tired of dealing with, but not necessarily tired of being black. So people address that in a variety of ways. And speaking
I
to
mean,
a lot
a
of the
metaphorical sense, though, not
no, I got you. Right. But what I'm saying is, I think speaking to a lot of the points that Judge was making throughout the conversation, I think a lot of people are becoming soft, and I think a lot of our conversation centers around people trying to avoid conflict and maybe forgetting that people are animals. We live in an animal world. Like, because we've got sophisticated and we've created, you know, certain technology and we wear ties or, you know, certain, you know, I think we're forgetting that it's still animals, still law, you know, it's still, you know, you still have to stand up for yourself and fight for everything and not just fight to get something. But once you get a thing, you have to fight to keep it. So there's a fight to get something, and then there's a fight to keep that thing. And I think that people who aren't ready to fight, you know, in many respects, they're never going to have anything because they don't really understand the underlying mechanism of the law of the jungle. I think the overt conversation with law of the jungle is maybe misleading. I think the real thing is about being willing to fight for the things that you love and appreciate, and then being willing to fight to keep those things.
Well, I missed the conversation, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is Bishop Scott. I just want to say I'm not tired of being black. I've been black for all my life, and not a day has gone by I've been black. So I was adjusted to that reality a long, long time ago. But in fact, and I would say it's true. We were always raised to be proud of who we are. We were always raised. My grandfather stood up against racism way back then. My grandfather was born in 1898, and he stood up for racism. Stood up toe to toe, even with his Jewish. He was a postman, and with his Jewish customers, or at least his Jewish people that were a part of his roots. He had to stand up for the racism there. So he set up a racism. I thought of the same thing. We've always been proud of who we are. Always have been, always will be. And I've tried to instill that in my children. I'm like many of them. This era now is a little different than mine. I came along like Judd Brown. I was a product of early half of the baby boomers. I'm 1950. So I'm part of that earlier group, not the latter group, but the earlier group, not too long after World War II and right at the heart of the Korean War. So, I mean, I was raised along that time. So my frustration lies in the fact that after 400 years, we still haven't gotten a place where we can actually join up and get those things done that we need to have done. I mean, you have people that have been here 5-10 years, and we got to go to their stores just to buy a loaf of bread. 400 years, and nobody even buys a glass of water from us. So that's been my frustration, our lack of perpetuating the spirit of the civil rights movement, the 50s, the 60s, and the early 70s. Somewhere along the way, we dropped the ball, and we let it lay there, and now it's someone's trying to grab it and bounce it again, and now we want to rise up. But I think if we would have kept on the path, of Malcolm X and the new Martin Luther King, not the one of the nonviolent compliance, but the one who got a little more over the stand the last 2 years of his, 2 or 3 years of his life. If we would have kept that going and built on that, I think we would be in a much better place today than we presently are.
Amen, Bishop.
America isn't sick of this. Because
who?
Because if I take this thing back, if I take it back, and in fact, I got a call today because someone was asking me about these other examples of African-Americans and impacted. I can just read some names. And let me go back here. I can go back to 2014. That was 6 years ago. America went on with Eric Garner. Took 5 years for the cop to be fired. America went on with Michael Brown. America went on with John Crawford III. America went on with Tamir Rice. America went on with Christian Taylor. America went on with Alton B. Sterling. America went on with Paul O'Neill. America went on with Keith Lamont Scott. America went on with Laquan McDonald. America went on with Akai Gurley. America went on with Walter Scott. America went on with Freddie Gray. America went on with Sandra Bland. America went on with Samuel DuBose. America went on with Ayanna Jones. America went on with Rakia Boyd. America went on with Philando Castile. America went on with Terrence Crutcher. America went on with Trayvon Martin. The reality is, for white America, not all, but for white America,
a large percentage,
at the end of the day, this is not my problem.
Because it's not a priority on the top five things they have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. And so as a result, America does go on. But until America realizes its promise of freedom, justice, and equality to all of us, not just some of us, it's going to continue to go on. And let's get one thing straight. I'm tired of hearing about bad apples. Let me tell you something. Those four cops, only one of them killed George, the detainee. Only one of them did. But those other three sat there and watched him do it and didn't come to that detainee's aid, didn't push the cop off. And so if you allow that type of corruption, 10 minutes, we watched the life of this young man go away before us. If you allow that to happen, America allows that to happen, then America is just as guilty as the actors. They're just an agent who's willing to put his knee on that individual's neck. So let's not forgive America or the good cops or other people who are American and liberal and white. Nobody gets forgiven on this. Nobody, starting right now. Because when it continues and America moves on, we're all guilty of it, especially white folks who won't stand up and join us and do anything about it. It's complete bullshit.
Did you enjoy this audio? We sure hope you did. Today's show is sponsored by My Olive Leaf. Please visit myoliveleaf.biz to shop for olive leaf extracts, which will assist your efforts to transform your life, detox your body, increase your energy, get restful sleep, and rid your body of antiviral, antibacterial, and antifungal properties. Do not delay. Contact the MOL reps today. Please visit myoliveleaf.biz for their full line of olive leaf extracts and moringa products. Oh yeah, for those of you who would like a personal consultation, please call the MOL reps at 612-567-3263. Also visit their website and social media pages for the latest on sales, new releases and more. Have a great day. See you in the comments section.